This is East End Ink. Tonight we present a celebration of Afro-American writers recorded this month at Canio's Books in Sag Harbor. The readers were members of the community, starting with a reading by Nancy Myers of Sag Harbor's John Germain Library.
I have a haiku and tanka for Harriet Tubman by Sanaya Sanchez. Picture a woman riding thunder on the legs of slavery. Picture her kissing our spines, saying no to the eyes of slavery. Picture her rotating the earth into a shape of lives becoming. Picture her leaning into the eyes of our birth clouds. Picture this woman saying no to the constant yes of slavery. Picture a woman jumping rivers, her legs inhaling moons. Picture her ripe with seasons of legs, running. Picture her tasting the secret corners of woods. Picture her saying, "You have within you the strength, the patience, and the passion to reach for the stars, to change the world." Imagine her words, "Every great dream begins with a dreamer." Imagine her saying, "I freed 1,000 slaves, could have freed 1,000 more if they only knew they were slaves." Imagine her humming, "How many days we got for we taste freedom?" Imagine a woman asking, "How many workers for this freedom quilt?" Picture her saying, "A live runaway could do great harm by going back, but a dead runaway could tell no secrets." Picture the daylight bringing her to woods full to birth moons. Picture John Brown shaking her hands 3 times saying, "General Tubman, General Tubman, General Tubman." Picture her words, "There's 2 things I gotta write to, death or liberty." Picture her saying no to a play called Uncle Tom's Cabin. "I am the real thing." Picture a black woman could not read or write, trailing freedom refrains. Picture her face turning southward, walking down a southern road. Picture this woman, freedom bound, tasting a people's preserved breath. Picture this woman of royalty, wearing a crown of morning air. Picture her walking, running, reviving a country's breath. Picture black voices leaving behind lost tongues.
Zora Neale Hurston. Fabulous woman, multi-talented. She was one of the most important figures to emerge from the Harlem Renaissance period. She was born and raised in the all-black town of Eatonville, Florida, in 1891, and she received her higher education from Morgan Academy, Howard University, Barnard College, and Columbia University. She experienced great pride in the black folk culture and was described as, quote, "draping black folk culture around herself like a robe," close quote. She spent many years traveling through the South collecting folk tales, using her own funds, small grants, and money from the WPA during the Depression. She published 2 collections of folklore, Mules and Men in 1935 and Tell My Horse in 1938, in addition to 4 novels, an autobiography, and numerous stories and essays. Today, I'm going to read 2 tales from a manuscript, well, a book that was not out before she died. They found the manuscript. It was clear that it was going to be published, but it just not had the final editing. And it's called "Every Tongue Got to Confess: Negro Tales from the Gulf States." These tales are known as gems or rigmaroles, and each town or village had people who were known as experts, great storytellers for their gems. Jim's a part of the rich storytelling tradition of Southern blacks, which and all of them were derived from and built on the rich oral traditions of the various parts of Africa from which they were taken. Once upon a time, there was a man named Good Time Charlie. He was working in the army for 75 cents, and so he decided to quit the army and walk on down the road. He met a man sitting on a stump, and this man had a bunch of ropes up around him. Good Time Charlie said, "Ain't you all crippled up?" He say, "I got 75 cents you can have for that. You can have half of this." The man told him to keep the money, and Good Time Willie asked him what his name was. He say his name was Disappear and Run Out of Sight. Good Time Willie told him there was a fortune at the end of the road for him. And so they both went on down the road, and they soon met another man. He too was sitting on a stump, and Good Time Charlie asked him what he was doing sitting there. And this man told him his name was Change the Weather. He told him to let him see some of his work. And so Change the Weather set his hat on one side and then it started to rain. And then he set his hat on top of his head and it stopped. Then Good Time Charlie told him, "Come and go with us. There is a fortune at the end of the road for you." They went on down the road and they saw another man in the ditch, and Good Time Charlie asked him, "What was he doing there?" And he said, "I blow water down the stream to grind the government corn." So Good Time Charlie told him to come and go with them, and that there was a fortune at the end of the road for all of them. All of them went on down the road, and then they met another man breaking down pine tree tops, throwing them over the mountain in his backyard. So Good Time Charlie asked him what he was doing, and he said, "I'm breaking off pine tree tops, throwing them over in my backyard." So Good Time Charlie told him, "Come and go with us. There's a fortune at the end of the road for you." So all of them went down the road until they got to the king's house. And the king told them that if there was a man out there that could outrun his daughter, well, he could marry his daughter. So Good Time Charlie told Disappear to go and be the one. And so the king gave him a bucket, and he gave the daughter a bucket, and disappeared and went out of sight. So he got his bucket of water, and then he laid down because he was so fast, and then he went to sleep. So the girl finally caught up, and she got her water, and she was fixing to go up the steps when Disappear woke up, and he jumped up and got his bucket, and he beat the girl to the house. Then the king said, "You have won my daughter. Tell you what I'll do." He said, "I've got some moonshine," and he made them all half drunk, and he told them he'd give them a place to stay. But that night, he went and got 7 firemen, and he started to burn up the men. Good Time Charlie woke up and shook Disappear, and Disappear shook Change the Weather, and he told him not to worry. So Change the Weather made it hail and storm, and that killed all the firemen. And the next day, the king said, "Boys, I tried to harm you, but I couldn't do you no harm. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you 3 carloads of gold." So Stormy got him a sack and sacked up all the gold, and he went back to the king for 3 more carloads. And then the king came down and tried to kill them all. Blow Stormy said to the men, his friends, "Get behind me. and he blew up all the air, and the king said, "Oh, please let me down, kind Willie." So, that's the end of my story, but I stepped on a pin, the pin bent, and that's the way the story went. And this is a shorter one. Why the cat has nine lives. One time it was very hard times, and this man had a wife and five children, and they didn't have anything to eat. So the man looked out, and there wasn't a dust of meal or flour in the barrel. So he fished and he fished. So he got himself a pole, a fishing pole, and they all went down to the water. So he fished and he fished till he caught seven fish. One for himself, one for his wife, and one each for his five children. Then he took the fish back to the house, and he said, then they realized that the fish had to be cleaned. So he and his wife went back to the pond, but he said to his children before he left, "Don't let the cat get near the fish, because he sure will bother it if you don't watch him." So while they were gone, of course, the children got to playing and forgot all about the cat and the fish. And the cat got up on the table and ate up all seven of the fish, because that was all he could hold, seven. Then the man came back and found out that the cat had eaten the fish. And he said, "These two little fish can't save all seven of us." And he looked at the cat, and his stomach was so full it was about to burst. So the man demanded that the cat eat the other two fish, and the cat burst and and died. So he said, the man said, "Now the rest of us will starve to death because of the cat." So they all went up to heaven. And when they got to heaven, God put the man on the scale to weigh his soul. And then the cat came up and looked at them so funny that God knew that there was something going on between the man and the cat. So he asked the man, "What's between you and this cat?" So the man told him the story about what the cat had done. And so then God said to Gabriel, "Grab that cat and throw him out of heaven." So because the cat had nine lives in his belly, he fell for 9 days before he reached hell. So that's why people say that the cat has nine lives.
G flat blues. I come from Alabama, Massachusetts, and New York. I was made to work just like a mule and eat that pork. I'm talking about pig's ears and pig's feet, baby. Pig's tail, the skin and grime, but I hardly got the part that's known as prime. They took me from my homeland, from the farms I used to know, shipped me across the great blue waters like cargo in a hold. I'm talking about ships deck chained and bleeding, sharp whips and sounds of pleading, and the moaning and the groaning, keeping time. I was taught to sing this music by my mother, freedom songs. I was never meant to serve some other. To her longing I belong. I'm telling you, no man can own his brother. No one can keep another. No woman taken against her mind. I created all this music, dug the ore up out the ground. But they claimed it all was laying there, just waiting to be found. I'm talking about sad songs and field hands weighing, singers and musicians playing, and all of us, and all of it, they say, was unrefined.
But if you ask Alberta Hunter, tell me why you sound so blue, she'll say she paid for those notes she played, but never got her due. I'm asking you, who owns those record labels? Who sells them turning tables? And who gets the 90 for the dime? They made me out a liar when I refused to pay the rent. But according to my calculations, I don't owe them a red cent. I'm telling you, they owe me reparations. Owe for incarceration. And the slaving I've been doing is a crime. They say the Christian ethic is to pay each one his due. But I ain't got the pay they promised, and they owe my children too. I'm telling you, pay me for the songs I played you. Pay me for the wealth I made you. Pay me for my hard-earned daily grind. I rose up my heartache, giving birth to modern song, and raising those voices still ascending from roots that made me strong. I'm talking about all the forms that live beside you, all the songs that reach inside you, all them sounds you hear, they really mine. I intend to raise this music and my babies to be free, to cultivate the seeds of peace and grow with dignity. I'm talking about living, being, breathing, loving, birthing, raising, hugging, nudging, and all of it so natural and divine. And all of it the meaning of sublime. And all of it so natural and divine.
This is East End Dink. We're listening to members of the community reading the work of Afro-American writers. We heard Nancy Myers reading Haiku for Harriet Tubman by Sanaya Sanchez, Gloria Brown reading the work of Zora Neale Hurston, and Laura Tucker reading from Jazz in Jail by Luis Reyes Rivera. Next, here is Etta Labrello reading the poetry of Everett Hoagland.
She rose from the rocker, unfolded the Afro-American article, pointed it out. Lord, this world's a mess. Folks fighting to be called most oppressed. Black folk, women folk, old folk. Who's most oppressed? Me, I guess, got it all. Being as I'm old, black, woman. But so what? Whining never got even a kid more than candy or a pat on the head. Nor a yard dog, a kick or a bone. Struggle and strife are the facts of life. Your hard-working grandpa's dead, but you are the afterlife of his labor. Our work has been our worship. So take our tattered, threadbare, patchwork hope and work with it. Yes, kneel to God. But stand up to people who fight your right to the life God give you. Some say home is where the heart is. That's true, if heart is courage, strength, and faith. 'Cause in this life, home is wherever your struggle is. And son, the work's undone. We just cleared the ground, plowed and planted. The weeding, the watering, watching, waiting, the long work is up to you. We ain't no ways through. So yes, keep the faith, but keep the farm too. Hold on to home ground and learn that living should be learning too. Remember what Frederick Douglass read and wrote for you, and Robeson, your Malcolm X and Dr. King. The main thing written clear, right amongst those headlines here. The whole world's your home. Here. Here.
Ann Petrie was born in Old Saybrook, Connecticut. She was encouraged by a high school English teacher to become a writer. She did go to college and studied pharmacy and worked at that. It was the family business for some time. After she married, she moved to New York, where she worked as a journalist and wrote short stories. She took creative writing classes at Columbia. She lectured at many universities. Her date's 1908, and she died in 1997. Yes. Tiara Jones says of her work, "Hers are the stories we need to fully illuminate the questions of our moment." So I'm just going to give you a little sample of the book. It's also compared with Richard Wright's Native Son, but it is very much a woman's story. She has this beautiful, long, slow description of the streets of Harlem post-World War II. There was a cold November wind blowing through 116th Street. It rattled the tops of garbage cans, sucked window shades out through the top of opened windows, and set them flapping back against the windows. And it drove most of the people off the street in the block between 7th and 8th Avenues, except for a few hurried pedestrians who bent double in an effort to offer the least possible exposed surface to its violent assault. It found every scrap of paper along the street, theater throwaways, announcements of dances and lodge meetings, the heavy waxed paper that loaves of bread had been wrapped in, the thinner waxed paper that had enclosed sandwiches, old envelopes, newspapers. Fingering its long way along the curb, the wind set the bits of paper to dancing high in the air, so that a barrage of paper swirled into the faces of the people on the street. It even took time to rush into doorways and areaways and find chicken bones and pork chop bones and push them along the curb. It did everything it could to discourage the people walking along the street. It found all the dirt and dust and grime on the sidewalk and lifted it up so that the dirt got into their noses, making it difficult to breathe. The dust got into their eyes and blinded them, and the grit stung their skins. It wrapped newspaper around their feet, entangling them, until the people cursed deep in their throats, stamped their feet, kicked at the paper. The wind blew it back again and again until they were forced to stoop and dislodge the paper with their hands. And then the wind grabbed their hats, pried their scarves from around their necks, stuck its fingers inside their coat collars, blew their coats away from their bodies. The wind lifted Ludie Johnson's hair away from the back of her neck so that she felt suddenly naked and bald, for her hair had been resting softly and warmly against her skin. She shivered as the cold fingers of the wind touched the back of her neck, explored the sides of her head. It even blew her eyelashes away from her eyes, so that her eyeballs were bathed in a rush of coldness, and she had to blink in order to read the words on the sign swaying back and forth over her head. Each time she thought she had the sign in focus, the wind pushed it away from her so that she wasn't certain whether it said 3 rooms or 2 rooms. If it was 3, why, she would go in and ask to see it. But if it said 2, why, there wasn't any point. Even with the wind twisting the sign away from her, she could see that it had been there for a long time because its original coat of white paint was streaked with rust, where years of rain and snow had finally eaten the paint off down to the metal, and the metal had slowly rusted, making a dark red stain like blood. It was 3 rooms. The wind held it still for an instant in front of her and then swooped it away until it was standing at an impossible angle on the rod that suspended it from the building. She read it rapidly. 3 rooms, steam heat, parquet floors, respectable tenants, reasonable. She looked at the outside of the building. Parquet floors here meant that the wood was so old and so discolored, no amount of varnish or shellac would conceal the scars and the old scraped places. The years of dragging furniture across the floors, the hammer blows of time, and children and drunks and dirty, slovenly women. Steam heat meant a rattling, clanging noise in the radiators, early in the morning, and then a hissing that went on all day. Respectable tenants in these houses were colored people who were allowed to live, included anyone who could pay the rent, so some of them would be drunk and loud-mouthed and quarrelsome. Given to fits of depression when they would curse and cry violently, given to fits of equally violent elation. And she thought, because the walls would be flimsy, why the good people, the bad people, the children, the dogs, and the god-awful smells would all be wrapped up together in one big package, the package that was called respectable tenants. The wind pried at the red skullcap on her head, and as though angered because it couldn't tear it loose from its firm anchorage of bobby pins, the wind blew a great cloud of dust and ashes and bits of paper into her face, her eyes, her nose. It smacked against her ears as though it were giving her a final exasperated blow, as proof of its displeasure in not being able to make her move on. Ludi braced her body against the wind's attack, determined to finish thinking about the apartment before she went in to look at it. Reasonable. Now that could mean almost anything. On 8th Avenue it meant tenements, ghastly places not fit for humans. On St. Nicholas Avenue it meant high rents for small apartments. And on 7th Avenue it meant great big apartments where you had to take in roomers in order to pay the rent. On this street it could mean almost anything.
This is East End Inc. We heard members of the Sag Harbor community reading from the works of Afro-American writers. We heard Nancy Myers reading Haiku for Harriet Tubman by Sanaya Sanchez, Gloria Brown reading the work of Zora Neale Hurston, Laura Tucker reading from Jazz in Jail by Luis Reyes Rivera, Ida Lorello reading the poetry of Everett Hoagland, and Caneo's Marianne Calendrill reading from The Street by Ann Petrie. The complete recording will be posted online at eastendinc.blogspot.com. The nonprofit Caneo's Cultural Cafe at 290 Main Street in Sag Harbor presents the following free literary events. On Saturday, March 28th at 5 p.m., author, poet, and farmer Scott Chasky reads from his work, Surveying 30 Years in Community-Supported Organic Farming, and more. And on Saturday, April the 4th at 5 p.m., poet, activist Kathy Engel reads from her new poetry collection, The Lost Brother Alphabet. East End Inc. is heard on the 4th and occasional 5th Wednesday of each month. Programs are archived at eastendinc.blogspot.com. Podcasts are available at soundcloud.com. Search simply for East End Inc. Today's program was produced by Tony Ernst with the aid of Marianne Calendrill and Catherine Zoka of Caneo's Books.